You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
From ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Chuck Sievertson in New York. Coming up,
if Americans are counting on payments from the government, should they start making backup plans at this point in case?
No, I wouldn't worry about that.
Debt ceiling stress. Remembering a massacre 1 year ago.
I know for a long time it's been hard to make progress, but there will come a point where our voices are so loud, our determination so clear, that we can no longer be stopped.
You're simply the best.
And farewell to a music legend.
Better than all the rest.
The people and events that made headlines when World News This Week continues.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
If Americans are counting on payments from the government, should they start making backup plans at this point in case?
No, I wouldn't worry about that.
Shades of optimism from both sides of the debt ceiling debate this week, even as the U.S. gets dangerously close to defaulting on its loan obligations. Republican negotiators in the White House were in talks all week to craft a deal that would raise the debt ceiling while cutting spending. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy telling ABC's Rachel Scott that talks are progressing, and President Biden also reassuring the American people that all sides are well aware of the time frame and the consequences.
Congressional leaders understand that, and they've all agreed there will be no default.
The debt ceiling refers to the limit on the amount of money that the U.S. can use to pay existing bills, and failure to raise it could delay payments that many Americans rely on, like Scott Schlesinger, who served in the Air Force for 20 years and gets veterans benefits.
Obligations are obligations. I'm responsible for mine. The government should be responsible for theirs.
56-year-old Pamela Gamby of Marion, Virginia, telling ABC News that her entire monthly budget is built around her $1,168 Social Security disability check and food stamps.
Without Social Security and SNAP, not only would we be homeless, my goodness, we wouldn't have money to buy food with.
Susan Prowl Meacham says she needs her $941 Social Security checks every month to pay her bills.
In Washington, we are being treated like numbers to be legislated or just totally figures on a page. And we're human beings, and we're doing the best we can with what we've got.
But most lawmakers left for the Memorial Day recess without a deal on the table. House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries on Thursday.
It's my understanding that the designees of both President Biden as well as Speaker McCarthy will continue to talk, but it is unfortunate that House Republicans have chosen to get out of town before sundown.
The main sticking points between Republicans and Democrats have to do with the amount of future spending to cut. Democrats in the White House had wanted lawmakers to vote to raise the debt ceiling on its own, but eventually agreed to making certain cuts. President Biden this week said that Republicans aren't willing to compromise enough.
Speaker McCarthy and I have a very different view of who should bear the burden of additional efforts to get our fiscal house in order. I don't believe the whole burden should fall on the backs of middle class and working class Americans. My House Republican friends disagree.
ABC's Andy Fields says Republicans also want stricter work requirements for Americans who receive welfare.
House Republican negotiator Garrett Graves suggesting Democrats want to give Americans on government benefits a free ride.
Their efforts actually put in jeopardy those very benefits that senior citizens like Medicare and Social Security, because they're refusing to negotiate a work requirement.
But Democrats and the president insist there are already tough work requirements to receive welfare benefits. Andy Field, ABC News, Washington.
ABC's Elizabeth Schulze outlines what could happen to the economy if the U.S. defaults.
Fitch warns that it might downgrade the U.S. credit rating. That could force the government to pay higher rates to borrow money. Then overall borrowing costs could go up, for example, for a new mortgage or for your credit card. If the government runs out of cash, it might pause payments for federal workers, and it might have to delay checks due in early June for Social Security, Medicare, or veterans benefits. Now, analysts say that ultimately those payments will be made, but even a short delay could affect millions of Americans. If you are worried about a delayed check, now is a good time to look at your own budget and prioritize your own bills due at the start of the month.
I know for a long time it's been hard to make progress, but there will come a point where our voices are so loud, our determination so clear that we can no longer be stopped.
Remembrance, grief, and renewed calls for action this week, marking 1 year since the mass shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. Church services and vigils honoring the 21 people, including 19 students who died on May 24th last year. And activists like Geneva Wharf with the group Junior Newtown Action Alliance calling on lawmakers to act.
Each time a new shooting is on the news, we relive the day that our own world came crashing down.
President Biden also marking the somber milestone. More from ABC's Karen Travers.
President Biden spoke slowly, his voice heavy with emotion, as he recalled his visit to Uvalde in the days after the mass shooting at Robb Elementary last year.
Standing there in Uvalde, Jill and I couldn't help but think that too many schools, too many everyday places have become killing fields in communities all across every part of America. And in each place, we hear the same message. Do something. For God's sake, please do something.
Noting that guns are the leading cause of death for children in the U.S., the president repeated his call for Congress to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Karen Travers, ABC News, the White House.
People in Uvalde still demanding answers after a botched police response that allowed the shooter to carry out the massacre for more than an hour. ABC's Jim Ryan has that.
The question that still gnaws at survivors and families is, who was in charge that day? Former acting Undersecretary of Homeland Security and ABC News contributor John Cohen says it appears that nobody was.
No one performed the basic function that's needed in an incident such as this to take command and control over the situation.
Once the legal disputes are settled, Robb Elementary School itself is to meet the wrecking ball. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
ABC's John Quinones with more on how the investigation has progressed.
What gets them through is just remaining true to who these children were and who these two teachers were. And again, demanding accountability and hoping for answers. Right now, the Texas Department of Public Safety has finished its investigation, turned it over to the district attorney here in Uvalde. She will decide then whether to send it over to a grand jury, and they will in the end decide whether or not there will be criminal charges that follow, if any.
ABC News producers and correspondents were embedded in Uvalde since the shooting as part of our Uvalde 365 project. ABC's Sherry Preston on how one of those producers describes the pain the community is still experiencing and says the memories are still raw.
ABC News producer Ismael Estrada was one of those who did not leave Uvalde, Texas after the massacre. He and a small team of ABC News journalists stayed in the community talking to those who lost loved ones. And he says it has been difficult for everyone in the community.
There's just so much pain and anger, and it's all mixed together. And there's pain from the families for losing their children. Those who weren't directly affected were the children just want to go back to what the town was.
The hardest part for families, he says, is living in the same town as those accused of not going into the school fast enough to save the victims. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
ABC News producer Tomas Navia followed the recovery of Arnie Reyes, a teacher at Robb Elementary. 11 of his students died in the shooting, and Reyes became a critic of the law enforcement response and an advocate for gun reform legislation. ABC's Michelle Franzen talked to Navia as part of our one-hour special this week, Uvalde 365.
What can you tell us of the time that you've spent there on the ground with him, about his injuries and how he's healing?
You know, it's been a very long road to recovery, and he is still recovering now. He was shot twice. once in his arm and once in his back. Immediately after the incident, he had to be rushed to a hospital, and he's been receiving treatment with Brooke Army Medical Center, which is a trauma one level sort of center that deals with people in our military who get injured.
And then what about your range of motion at home? Are you doing any home exercises?
Yes.
I followed him to a doctor's appointment several months ago. You know, they talked about his recovery, and his doctor's goal at this point is to be able to get his left hand to make a fist.
So like one knuckle at a time, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can have someone else.
There was so much swelling after the surgeries that, you know, he couldn't move his fingers.
That's how we'll get that passive motion back, because they're just like so stiff still.
Now he has more motion. He has more feeling. Some of the nerves are waking up. He's still trying to get to a point where he can fully close his left hand. So that's a big part of his physical recovery. In terms of his emotional recovery, you know, he, I think over time, has come to realize the lasting impact that this mass shooting has had on him. You know, he laid on the floor for 77 minutes bleeding out.
You know, he would taunt me. He would splash blood on my face and everything.
He feels like law enforcement abandoned him.
They have all the tactical gear, bulletproof vests, guns. I have a pencil. It's not the same battle.
This pain, he's trying to turn it into purpose.
We're here in Austin to talk against gun violence.
He has become an advocate. He's become a voice, not only for himself, but for his students.
Yeah, so I think his journey and relationship with activism, like with all of his recovery, has sort of gone up and down.
I have not done as much activism as I would like to, of course, but because I've been in recovery.
He was a very early critic publicly of the police response to what happened on May 24th, 2022. You know, he was still in his hospital bed when he was giving interviews to the media, telling his accounts.
We trained our kids to sit under the table. And that's what I thought of, you know, at the time. You can give us all the training you want, but gun laws have to change.
But over time, as he has become both emotionally and physically stronger, he has felt that he can speak up more.
Mr. Reyes.
Arnie, we love you, Arnie.
Good afternoon.
Love you, Mr. Reyes.
Love
you,
bro. I come here today to let the governor know that expanding guns into schools will not make it safer.
You know, he wants to use whatever strength he has to make sure that his students and coworkers are not forgotten.
Thank you for putting up with these technical issues. I think we're definitely breaking new ground here.
It wasn't a smooth entry into the 2024 campaign. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis made it official this week, throwing his hat into the ring for the Republican presidential nomination. DeSantis holding a question and answer session on Twitter, but the event was muddied with technical glitches and audio issues. More from ABC's Lindsay Watts.
For 21 minutes, the feed included silence and crackling audio. The site's owner, Elon Musk, who was hosting the event, could be heard saying so many people were logged in, Twitter's servers were melting.
I think we've got just a massive number of people online, so it's servers are straining somewhat.
But by the time DeSantis started speaking, the app showed there were less than 300,000 people listening in. ABC News Chief Washington Correspondent Jonathan Carl says DeSantis' main rival, former President Trump, mocked the whole thing.
This campaign said in a statement, glitchy, tech issues, uncomfortable silences, a complete failure to launch, and that's just the candidate. Despite the rough start, DeSantis has advantages. The 44-year-old governor won re-election last year in a 19-point landslide, and he has raised more money by far than any other Republican challenger to Trump.
But former President Trump was embroiled in more legal trouble, appearing virtually before a New York City court this week. ABC's Aaron Katursky has more on Trump's response to a trial date that was set.
He called that very unfair, that his criminal trial for falsifying business records is going to coincide with primary season. In fact, when he appeared here in court virtually, he looked really irritated when the judge set that trial date of March 25th, 2024, forcing Trump to juggle his campaign to recapture the White House with a criminal case that stems from a hush payment to porn actress Stormy Daniels.
ABC's Aaron Katursky also says that Trump could be facing more legal issues by then.
By the time he goes on trial here in Manhattan, Trump could be facing a range of criminal charges. Investigations involving January 6th, election interference in Georgia, and his handling of classified material are all nearing a conclusion as soon as this summer.
Mr. Trump has another challenger who entered the presidential race this week.
This administration has taxed, borrowed, and spent trillions of dollars trying to replace a hand up with handouts.
That's South Carolina Republican Senator Tim Scott, who kicked things off with a rally in North Charleston. Here again, ABC News Chief Washington Correspondent Jonathan Carl, who says that Scott hopes to distinguish himself.
He brings a stark contrast to Trump and DeSantis and, frankly, really anybody else in the race right now. Not really on policy. He's very conservative. He's as conservative as any of them. But it's tone. He is the hopeful, optimistic, the happy warrior. That's the kind of campaign he's talking about running.
A member of the Oath Keepers gets a lengthy prison sentence for planning the January 6th attack at the Capitol. More from ABC News Chief Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas.
The leader of the Oath Keepers militia headed to prison for nearly two decades for his role as one of the main architects in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. In handing down the 18-year prison term for seditious conspiracy, the longest of any January 6th defendant, federal judge Amit Mehta called Stuart Rhodes an ongoing threat and a peril to the country.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton accused of ethics violations. Here again, ABC's Jim Ryan.
Among the allegations laid out before a state House investigative committee is that Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton accepted but did not report a major campaign contribution. Republican State Representative Charlie Guerin.
Not many people walk up to me and give me $100,000. In fact, I don't believe it's ever happened.
Paxton has been hounded by ethics questions throughout his time in office, but he's remained popular with his conservative base by defending former President Trump and lambasting current President Biden. Jim Ryan, ABC News, Dallas.
The U.S. Supreme Court challenging protections for wetlands under the Clean Water Act.
The Supreme Court ruling for a family that faced hurdles in building a home near an Idaho lake. The EPA arguing the property fell under the wetlands jurisdiction of the Clean Water Act. But the high court deciding unanimously the home was not subject to that law, but were divided 5-4 over defining wetlands. Justice Samuel Alito narrowing the term to include lands with continuous surface connection to bodies of water, including streams, oceans, rivers, and lakes. Justice Brett Kavanaugh siding with the court's three liberals, criticizing Alito's restrictive wetlands definition. Justin Finch, ABC News, Washington.
Time to give back those Netflix passwords. The company this week cracking down on account sharing.
It's time.
Netflix saying it's time. If someone outside your household is using your password to watch Stranger Things or whatever, Netflix knows. And Tuesday started sending emails to customers informing them that a Netflix account is for use by one household only. No password sharing. Or if you want to share, there are options. Netflix says it'll be happy to charge you an extra $8 a month to share your account with someone who doesn't live with you. But the days of freeloading are over.
See you on the other side.
Jason Athens and ABC News.
On the other side.
Hollywood.
You're simply the best.
Coming up, saying goodbye to simply the best.
Better than all the rest.
When World News This Week continues.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
She was a pop music icon who clawed her way back to stardom later in life. Tina Turner died this week at the age of 83. Tributes pouring in from around the world, including from an unlikely source.
A changing tune for the changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace, where the Band of the Welsh Guards and 1st Battalion Welsh Guards Corps of Drums paid a musical tribute to Tina Turner with Simply the Best. Tributes too in Parliament, House of Commons Leader Penny Mordaunt leading the voices, describing her as an icon. Tom Rivers, ABC News, London.
ABC's Deborah Roberts has a look back on her life and career.
Tina Turner's hit anthem may well have summed up her life. The lyrics, a fitting description for a one-of-a-kind superstar whose unmatched stamina, fierce voice, and sex appeal cemented her as a rock and roll legend. Born Anna Mae Bullock in rural Nutbush, Tennessee, Tina, with a new name and hunger for stardom, would become a beacon of resilience during a rocky journey to the top.
Life's a good job in the city, working for the man every night and day.
In her form-fitting minis, Tina shimmied to early success in the 60s alongside her then-husband, musician Ike Turner. The duo reaching the international stage by 1966, touring with the Rolling Stones in Europe and America. But offstage, Tina endured an abusive relationship. She would later find the strength to leave. In 1976, with only 36 cents in her purse, Tina fled her marriage, forging a path on her own.
I'm your pride.
Her 1984 debut solo album, Private Dancer, soaring and reinventing her career with the breakup anthem in what would become her best-selling single.
What's love got to do? Got to do with it. Who needs a heart when a heart can be broken?
A number one record, 3 Grammys, and 11 million copies sold. At 45 years old, she was now the queen of rock and roll.
You think I don't know the law? Wasn't it me who wrote it?
A bona fide star, Tina set her eyes on the big screen with a celebrated role in the 1985 film Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
You've said that making movies is now what you're after. I mean, it's very important to you. Why is that so important to you?
That was in the beginning always the priority, but first of all, there were no black parts for women. I had to actually wait, I think, until it was time that I could get a part. I've been singing all my life. That was no challenge. I mean, in church, and I was a little girl, and but acting was something that was new.
Her own life story, What's Love Got to Do With It, filmed in 1993, would earn Angela Bassett an Oscar nomination.
Okay, Angela, get this feeling. Get this. Get the pulse going with it.
Your mom's done saying, though, that touch of your hand.
Tina's artistry influencing a generation to come, from Mary J. Blige to Beyonce, who shared the stage with Turner at the 2008 Grammy Awards. The pop star paying homage to her idol, writing, "My beloved queen, I love you endlessly. I'm so grateful for your inspiration and all the ways you've paved the way." Fellow rock and roll legend Mick Jagger writing, "She helped me so much when I was young and I will never forget her." Touring well into her 70s, Tina forged a bond with Oprah Winfrey, who wrote this about her friend, "I am a better woman, a better human, because her life touched mine. She was indeed simply the best."
You're simply—
And those are the people and events that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Joy Piazza. I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News, New York.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.